First, we look at this latest disaster to hit a country on the Pacific Rim, an earthquake off the coast of Japan. Well, as you've been hearing, one of the most powerful earthquakes in a century has caused a devastating tsunami on the east coast of Japan, and this tsunami is still travelling through the Pacific. There's just been a second earthquake reported 196 kilometres northwest of Tokyo, around 6.6 points in magnitude. The television images of the first quake and tsunami have been extraordinary. Factories, houses, ships and roads swept up in a black sea of water surging through the landscape around Sendai, 400 kilometres north of Tokyo. The death toll is expected to be more than 1,000. Transport systems are paralysed, communications cut, and there are concerns about the safety of the country's nuclear power plants. Simon Boxall from the National Oceanography Centre at Southampton University is a leading tsunami expert, and he joins us now from London. Simon, thanks very much for being with us.
That's okay. Good morning.
You must be as shocked as anyone. How do you compare this earthquake to others that have happened in recent times?
It's very difficult to compare because, I mean, we talk about earthquakes in terms of their force. This is an 8.9. But actually, at the end of the day, what matters is the damage they cause and whether they create things like tsunamis. Now, this one's occurred in the open ocean. It's a thrust earthquake, which means that there's a sudden upsurge of land beneath the sea. And this has caused a significant tsunami in excess of 10 metres, certainly along the Japanese coast. So it's a big one. It's not quite as big as the incident we had in Indonesia back in 2004 on Boxing Day, but it's pretty close to it.
You say it's a thrust earthquake, so it is actually the movement of land generating this tsunami. And I think you have talked about the tsunami, something like a brick being dropped in a pond. It's that significant, is it?
It's that significant. It's a bit like taking a very, very large brick that's a few tens of kilometres along and just literally hurling it into a very big pond and seeing the waves that are created. And it's these waves that then wash up on the shore. But these waves are moving at a phenomenal speed. They're moving across the open ocean, the deep water, at a speed of about 500 miles an hour, 800 kilometres an hour, the speed of a jumbo jet. But as they reach the coast, they start to slow down. But the back of the wave is still going full pelt. So as they approach the coast, the wave piles up, and then that's when it causes the destruction. It just becomes enormous.
Now, Japan has one of the world's most sophisticated warning systems, but from what you're saying, this was moving so quickly and being relatively close, being generated from the earthquake off the coast, that it was too fast for those systems.
Those systems could never have coped with it. It would have taken between 10 and 15 minutes from the earthquake happening to the wave hitting the coast. You cannot do anything. I mean, it takes that long to detect the fact that an earthquake has taken place and to then send the warning out. By the time the warning is going out, destruction is happening already. Where the early warning system works is further afield, places like Hawaii, Australia, New Zealand, where there are hours to respond to this. And obviously then you can save lives and you can certainly minimise the impact of the tsunami. But that close to, there's nothing we can do. Nature wins.
So if we've had another earthquake reported, 6.6 this time, is there a further concern about yet another tsunami?
Not yet. The earthquake at 6.6, which is substantial, to put that into perspective, the Christchurch earthquake in New Zealand was a 6.3, so it's a big earthquake still. But this has taken place on land. Now, because of that, it's not going to create a tsunami, a second tsunami. Nonetheless, it's still causing damage, and of course, any earthquake, whether it's on land or at sea, causes vibration damage.
So take us through what would happen in, if we can call it the tsunami warning center in Japan. When an earthquake happens, how do they get any sense whether a tsunami is going to be generated? What goes on there?
This is the tricky bit, because not all earthquakes make tsunamis. So the first thing that happens is an earthquake occurs, and they have pressure sensors on the seabed and depth gauges along the coast. So the first thing one knows that there's a tsunami en route is that one suddenly sees a surge in the pressure gauge. Now, in the open ocean, that surge in this case was 1 meter, which is still big. That's the big tsunami in the open ocean. Normally, they are maybe 30, 40 centimeters. So that would have been detected straight away. But, of course, the speed of the wave means you could do nothing about it. further afield, the progress of the wave has been tracked. We can model, we can use the basic laws of physics to work out roughly what time that wave, those waves will hit Hawaii, the US coast, California, Australia, and so on. So that part of it is very easy. The difficult bit is knowing how big the wave will be when it strikes, and that is almost impossible to model.
So fortuitously, at this stage, it seems that in other parts of the Pacific, this wave hasn't been ruinous. But going on to another topic, though, this ring of fire that goes around the Pacific where the plates meet other tectonic plates, do we get any sense what might have caused this particular earthquake? Was there any indication this movement could happen?
No, I mean, they called it a pre-shock a few days earlier, which again was about 6.6, 6.8 as a shock, which is quite a big earthquake. You can call it a pre-shock when you know a big one comes, but of course you don't know whether that's a pre-shock or just an earthquake. And bear in mind, around the Ring of Fire, you know, there are different figures. In terms of measurable earthquakes, in terms of earthquakes people can feel, there are probably, you know, 10 earthquakes a day almost around that Ring of Fire. So it's not unusual to get these earthquakes, and it's very difficult to know when the big ones come, and that's the big problem, is trying to predict the big earthquakes.
Well, I suppose it's even more difficult to put two and two together, because immediately we hear something has happened in Christchurch, now something has happened in Tokyo. Is there any potential connection between these two?
No, I mean, they're all on the Ring of Fire, and actually, if you sit down and you actually map out major earthquakes and you look at the destruction that occurs, you can sort of very quickly try and link two or three together, but actually, if you keep looking back, you find that there are more and more, and actually, there is no fixed pattern. So, you know, we're not seeing a sudden surge in earthquakes and tsunamis. These have been going on for a long time. I think we're more sensitized to them. We are seeing, as populations grow, as cities get bigger, as we get more people living in the cities, when these things happen, the destruction they cause, the damage they cause, is similarly larger as well. So, you know, because we're pushing our limits as to where we live, we're living on low ground, we're going to be hit by tsunamis more often.
Yes, well, I guess that's going to be something to talk about in the near future. Simon Boxall, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Simon Boxall is a leading expert on tsunamis from the National Oceanography Centre at Southampton University. Now, as dawn breaks in Japan's capital, Tokyo, people will be waking up from there, wherever basically they could lay their heads in many cases. After the earthquake shook the city at around 2:30 p.m. yesterday, the vast railway system that transports roughly 30 million people in and out of Tokyo was suspended, leaving many people stranded. David Crisante was one of the lucky ones, in a sense, a freelance journalist who lives in Tokyo. He was able to stay at his home in the city, and he joins us now. Good morning, David.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Well, I say you're one of the lucky ones, but I suspect if you're any kind of building, you wouldn't have been feeling too good when this earthquake hit. What was it like?
When the earthquake hit, it was quite mild at the beginning. There's been a few earthquakes in recent days, and this was not very different to that. However, this just kept on going and going, and basically you could hear this roar from the buildings as they not only began swaying, but actually started jumping about in all different directions. It just went on for literally 5 minutes, this huge kind of quake and shaking of all the buildings around me. And then the aftershocks themselves were actually much harder than any of the earthquakes felt in recent days. So that definitely set a lot of people, there were panic calls amongst a lot of people, and a lot of people were very concerned about what was happening. There was a lot of confusion right when the quake hit, and people were not sure what to do.
Now, have you had any sense of the latest quake, which we're told is around 6.6? Is that sent any tremors through Tokyo where you are?
I haven't, but the aftershocks of the initial quake were higher than that in terms of the tremors that they sent out. So basically since the initial quake, you know, currently it's about 5:45 in the morning here. I went to sleep about 5 hours ago, and there were still shakes. My bed was still shaking as I went to sleep. So I don't know of the latest quake that's happened, but I'm not at all surprised that there would still be tremors because, you know, there were extremely strong tremors that were much stronger than the quakes that we've had over the last few days as I went to sleep, you know, well over 10 hours after the initial quake hit. So that doesn't surprise me at all.
So in your own mind, what was going on? What did you think? Did you think I'm really in trouble at this point when the original quake hit?
I was very scared. It was definitely much larger than anything that I'd felt, and I was with Japanese people who were saying that this was something that they had not felt before in their lifetimes in Tokyo. People were concerned mainly because the quake itself was so severe and it went for so long, not to mention the fact that the aftershocks were so rough themselves. Usually you see buildings sway, but to see them actually jump around like that, that's very unusual. People were not sure what to do. A lot of them left their workplaces and went into parks and gathered there. Some went back to work afterwards, but a lot of businesses shut down and told people to go home. In central Tokyo, that itself was a major issue because a lot of the train lines had been shut down. Well, all of the train lines had been shut down, mainly because they were worried that the tracks were going to move if another tremor hit, and that tracks may have already moved, particularly around bridges and around rivers. So there was a lot of concern and people were not sure what to do. And that resulted in a lot of people spending the night in Tokyo because they were simply unable to go home. We're talking hundreds of thousands of people, possibly millions of people, all who are unable to go home, unable to contact their loved ones because the phone lines are completely down. So in Tokyo, there is a sense of calm, but definitely people are not sure what to do. They haven't gotten information, clear and accurate information from the government because it's simply unable to provide it. The situation is changing so often. And also in Tokyo, you know, things aren't as bad here as what they are on the coast.
Well, two things occur to me. One is that Japanese people would go back to work, which shows incredible dedication and fearlessness. But the second thing is this notion of up to a million people basically out on the street all night. Obviously, communications, as you have said, are difficult. But are we getting any sense that the city is in any way getting back to normal and some of these people are now getting home?
A little bit. Some of the metro system did open up late last night. They're the kind of, train systems that operate solely underground. But there are literally hundreds of train stations throughout Tokyo, and these are by no means any of the major ones. So that would mean that literally, you know, I'm talking a huge number of people were unable to get home. I was able to speak to some people that I know here. Some of them were turning back to their workplaces to sleep there. Other people were going to kind of government-organized areas to sleep. Schools, universities, community halls, these all packed full of people who were kind of taking the situation in their stride. A lot of people were also going to supermarkets. Many of the supermarkets closed down after the quake, but some that remained open, they were being raided essentially for, you know, goods such as food and water. People were very concerned that they might run out of these basic necessities over the next few days, particularly because ports seem to be hit by the tsunamis, and it's unclear as to how much food will be getting into the country over the next few days. So people are concerned, but right now people would be waking up in these community halls. Literally a huge number of people will be waking up and awaiting government kind of announcements as to whether the train lines will be opening. I suspect they will be. There's no main reason for them to remain shut today. But as to when that happens and how many of them open, because there could be damage to some of the lines, that remains to be seen.
But basically what you are saying is there was very little chaos in terms of the way the people reacted, and certainly no panicking amongst the population.
Yeah, that would be fair. Japanese people are used to earthquakes. However, the scale of this one is, of course, on a different level to what they're used to. But in Tokyo, you know, buildings have not collapsed. There's not been widespread damage. Walking around the streets of Tokyo last night, you saw numerous car accidents, many more than you would normally see. The fire brigade was going all night, putting out fires or you know, rescuing people who might have been trapped by falling debris, but there was nothing major that was happening in Tokyo which was concerning large groups of people in terms of damage and destruction. So people had, had fair reason to be calm.
Okay.
But obviously the situation is unfolding at a quite quick rate.
All right, David Crisanto, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
David Crisanto is a freelance journalist, and we were talking to him on a little bit of a dodgy Skype line there, but that's okay. It's a very interesting picture of what's going on there. We're going to come back after 8 and look at Japan again, and in this case, looking at the radiation fears due to the quake affecting nuclear facilities. You are listening to Saturday Extra. My name is Mark Bannerman, and the time is 13 minutes to 8 o'clock.